Listening to Audio Art's Wallpaper Supplement in conversation with Susan Hiller. Prologue. On the 9th of October 2017, a meeting took place in Susan Hiller's studio at Swiss Cottage in London. No recording and no photos were taken at the meeting. The only record of it is a few handwritten notes. Over a cup of mint tea, kindly offered by her, we started to talk about a series of findings that I had encountered in the Audio Arts archive, including a series of tapes done for her installation Monument and the original slide tape for Magic Lantern, commissioned by the Whitechapel Gallery. At first, she looked at me a bit disappointed and surprised, as those recordings should not have been there, she said. However, after the clarification how those recordings had ended up in the Audio Arts archive, the conversation resumed. Susan started to sharpen her color pencils while we were talking. I relaxed and moved on to other questions. I asked her about her collaboration with Audio Arts magazine and the production of Wallpaper Supplement, published in 1975. Eventually, I stopped taking notes and it got very animated when at some point we started discussing the recording that William Fulham had done with her and Mary Kelly in 1977. She talked openly about her direct involvement in the feminist movement in the 1970s and about her experience of consciousness-raising groups. There were other topics I was fascinated by, as for example, the engagement with sound and voice in her own works, such as the installation Monument. I asked Susan if this was somehow informed by a feminist theory of voice, and if she knew the work of philosopher Adriana Cavarero. In a very bold statement, she said, "I do not do feminist art. As soon as you put an adjective to something, there is a problem. The real potential of art is to provide a space where people can exercise their feelings. Art is knowledge," she said. "I'm not interested in theory to talk about art through theory. Sometimes art arrives before theory. It works with intuition." Digressing from the audio art subject and moving into other topics, the conversation went on. What was planned as a brief introductory meeting became, to my surprise, an intense two-hour conversation. I felt a bit guilty to stretch the meeting, but when I was about to leave, she said it was fun. While I left the studio fully energized and empowered by this generous conversation, I also realized that no clear arrangement was set for the listening session I wanted to propose for the show and tell event at the Tate, something that only became clear a few months after this meeting. Despite my initial idea of presenting Hiller's sound work published by Audio Arts, such as Ilan, over the summer it was finally agreed to focus the event on the Wallpaper Supplement. She thought that her tapes were not appropriate material for this occasion, while she felt confident about presenting the recordings done for Wallpaper. In an email, she wrote, "I do think the Wallpaper tape might be very interesting to present and discuss, since it represents a range of approaches by a loose grouping of artists who made works specifically designed for the audio tape format." The event finally took place on the 7th September 2018 in the Hyman Crichton Reading Room at Tate Britain. Prior to the listening session, I provided a guided tour of the temporary display co-curated with Claire Sexton, including the volumes and supplements of Audio Arts and other sound works collected over time by Furlong. The library quickly filled up with an inquisitive audience. The improvising musician Adam Bowman attended the event, and in between the visitors, he recorded one of his notorious Tolkien tapes.
Tape Live, Brian Archive, Hyman, Crichton, Reading Rooms, that's where we're going, moving through the door. There's cassette tapes to do with sound art laid out on tables. I don't know the exact form of the talk. It looks like Lucia will be interviewed by a female artist. I don't know who it is, or maybe it's the other way around. I'll read you some of the titles, Al. Ian Breakwell, Continuous Diary of Richard Hamilton and Data Roth. Joseph Boyce Lectures, 1996 Art and Science, including Martha Fleming, William Furlong, Richard Gregory, Cornelius Hess, Honegger, Arthur Miller, Mark Pauline, Johann Chernapel, From the Cradle to the Grave, Damien Hirst with Norman Rosenthal and William Furlong. John Cage art is either a complaint or do something else. More cassette tapes, recent English experimental music, Gavin O'Briers, Christopher Hobbs, James Lampard, Michael Nyman, etc. Improvised music and sound, Antonio Rosolo, Ian Breakwell and Ian McQueen, Hugh Davis and David Toop. Dreamhouse making pictures, Charles Bukowski, Henry Chopin. Selection Sound Magazine from Audio Arts Associated Collection, including Fast Forward Cassette Magazine, Fuck Off, Trapezine, and New Wilderness Audio Graphics. These recordings were collected by William Furlong. I must point out here, Al, I wasn't suddenly insulting you. That was what the Trapezine was called, that rude word. More tapes at another table. Actuality Audio Arts at the Venice Biennale, 1984. Documentary 8. Venice.
In this short audio essay, I will play back extract from the listening session with Susan Hiller. While no rehearsal was set up for the event, the selected tracks from the wallpaper supplement were re-edited by Hiller with the help of musician and sound engineer David Cunningham. What we realize happened in the digitization process of the cassette tape from analog to digital was the fact that certain tracks had lost their depth and tactile impressions. Susan was very pleased with the improvements made by Cunningham and brought those recordings to the event. What follows is her introduction to the selected recordings we listened to at the event together with the audience. So, Susan, how you would like to start?
It's very weird being part of an archive. That's the first thing I want to say. I always felt that the whole system of keeping records was very poor in this country, because coming from a new country where there's an obsession with history, creating history, you know, the archives in art are stupendously good and detailed and are ongoing. And here, until quite recently, this wasn't the case. So I'm not surprised that just trying to organize an archive, create an archive of the audio arts material is such an enormous task. But today, really, my task is only to talk a little bit about Wallpaper Magazine, to give background to how the I want to say the document, but it's not a document. It's a tape, which is a sort of document, how the supplement came about. And there are people in the room here today who know about this in more detail, namely Auntie Howell, Richard Quarrell. And I'm sure that if you have questions, it might be more appropriate to address those questions to them, because they're very fortunate that they're here. I just want to say that Wallpaper was a very heterogeneous collection of artists, initiated, I think, by Anthony Howell, and it existed in London and New York, because people lived in those two different places. And it happened over, was it a two-year period? Came to an almost natural end when different members of this very loose group started to go off in very different directions. But for the time that it existed, although it was a paper publication, it had some very radical implications. It was a collective. There was no sole editor. We were all designated as editors. We took turns appearing in the magazine. I think our greatest collective achievement was a very bumper double issue with a large number of guests, which, if you look at the list, I just wanted to indicate the heterogeneity of the group of artists who started the Wallpaper magazine, because we were each allowed to select, I believe, two guests, and the diversity of the practices of those guests will indicate the directions that we were all developing into. Remember, we were all very young when this started. And that brings me to another point, which has to do with, in many cases, the not very good quality of the recordings we're going to listen to. This is because, in those days, hardly any of us could afford good equipment. We borrowed equipment if we were fortunate. And none of us had been invited to teach. And you know that the art school in this country is the source of experimentation in the arts, insofar as experiments often require equipment of various sorts. And the only place you're going to find video or audio equipment or even computers of a certain kind in this country happens to be at art colleges. Unless you're teaching, you don't have access. Students are very fortunate. And it's a terrible feeling when you leave college and you realize you don't have any equipment to make your work with. People are nodding in the audience. Okay, so the quality of some of the things I'm going to play will remind you that the early 70s were actually a very long time ago. in technical terms, more than other ways, okay? So now I have made a very personal selection of works to listen to. And some of them I think you'll find a bit testing, perhaps, but none of them last longer than 4 minutes. Basically, we all worked to a 4 minute, we agreed more or less a four minute limit so that we could all fit onto one cassette. One or two people exceeded that, and unfortunately we'll have to cut them off for fairness. Also, the magazine had a preponderance of poets and people using words. And in order to actually show the breadth of, how can I say this, the beginnings of some things that were happening other than words, I've eliminated a lot of the poets. You'll please forgive me if you're here. Okay, I'm going to start with two, I've paired these for reasons that may become clear or not. I've paired the people you're going to, whose work you're going to hear for various reasons. The first two selections will be Susan Bonvin and Anthony Howell. And the reason that I'm suggesting that they might be an interesting beginning is that both of them provide instructions or information about what their work is, how their work is composed as part of the work. Okay? So let's start with Susan Bonvin, please.
Mm-hmm. Method for evolving a continuous sound. The second half of this piece consists of a continuous sound. Arrange the loudspeaker so that it is about 1 foot 6 inches in front of you at ear level. Close your eyes and rock your body towards and away from the loudspeaker as evenly as possible until you have established the sound as receding and advancing. Next, introduce a sideways movement so that your head and body are moving in a circle. With your fingers, block the ear facing towards the center of the circle so that you are alternately blocking one ear and then the other, making the transition smoothly. Gradually, a circle of sound will be heard, with a center that is close to, but a little in front of, the center of the circle that you are moving in, with a diameter a little smaller than the diameter of the circle of your head, and which moves in the opposite direction, passing your head twice in each revolution.
I said it might be a bit testing. You know that when you work in Italian-based media, say film, video, or sound, a minute is a very, very long time. And how long do you think that was?
The whole thing, or just
the sound? The whole thing, because she's including herself on the same track with the...
6 minutes?
No. 3 minutes, it's three. You see how long, it's interesting, yeah, okay, that, I just, all right, now Anthony Howell, please.
Family vortices. Use a word chosen at random with a word for progeny and a word for progenitor, as well as using the definite article twice, each article always to be followed by any one of the three aforementioned, and as well as using any preposition, which is always to precede one of the definite articles. The word for progeny and the word for progenitor may be altered more often than the word chosen at random. The preposition should be altered more often than any other word. Utter expressions incorporating only these instructions or a part of these instructions alone. Enunciation should accelerate with the length of the expression uttered. String recipe exercise. Choose 7 words for one gender and 7 for the other. Include 1 further word, all for possessive pronouns and the definite article. Alternate words with pronouns, substituting the definite article for every second or third pronoun.
Verb is gigolo.
House.
Whose daughter?
By the
dad.
Grandma.
His wife. His father.
The
nanny. Their son.
House.
Whose remand?
To the baby
end.
Broke by the father, laughs with the grandma, the house of the puppy broken, the baby
mistress.
Laughs under the puppy.
The uncle.
The
their
laughs.
Dad. Whose daughter?
Broke.
The priest.
In the baby.
Her gigolo. His mother.
The house.
The wife.
Broke.
Her father.
By the father, laughs
his uncle.
With the grandma, the house of the puppy broken, the baby laughs
the
under
niece.
The puppy, the house beneath the father
his
broke
husband.
From the grandma, laughs
yeah.
At the puppy, the house to the grandma broke by the puppy.
Their remand, his
laughs
son, the nanny,
by
their
the
father,
baby,
whose dad, his wife,
broke
her daughter, The priest.
At the grandma.
Who's gigolo? The son.
Laughs.
Their remand.
From the husband. Grandma. At the baby.
Their uncle. Who's mistress?
To the grandma.
The niece.
Broke by the
his puppy. Husband.
Laughs with the Her father. Aunt. The house. The baby their broke. Remand. The father laughs
the under son.
The grandma. The house beneath
his
the
nanny.
Puppy. Broke from the
his
baby.
Father.
Laughs at the puppy.
The wife. Her dad.
Laughs.
His daughter.
At
their priest. The gigolo.
Baby.
Whose mother? The mistress.
The laughs. Broke.
Their remand. His son.
House.
Her nanny. Her aunt. The
her
husband.
House. Broke by the father. Laughs with the grandma.
Niece.
The house of the puppy. Broke.
His mistress. His uncle.
Under the grandma.
The mother. His gigolo. His priest. Her. The whose daughter?
La.
His dad.
In
the wife.
Puppy.
Her father. Her remand. His nanny. The
baby.
Son. The remand.
Under the father laughs at the house.
The aunt. Whose daughter?
The laughs under the puppy. The house beneath
the, mother.
The father broke from the puppy. The baby. The puppy.
Their priest. His husband.
Laughs.
The aunt.
At the grandma.
His son.
Broke.
Her remand.
By.
Her nanny.
Puppy laughs.
Her dad.
The father, the house to the
his
baby,
wife,
the house to the baby.
The priest.
Broken the father.
Their daughter. The dad.
Laughs.
His uncle.
Under.
His mistress.
The house.
The niece.
Of the baby.
His husband. His dad.
By.
The wife.
The puppy.
Their remand. The nanny.
The baby laughs with
her
the father,
son,
the house of the baby broken, the father, the
his
house
gigolo,
of the baby broke by the father, laughs with the grandma, the house of the puppy,
their wife,
and the baby,
whose remand,
laughs under the grandma, baby.
Her aunt,
laughs,
his husband, their remand.
We have just heard Anthony Howell's piece, Two Exercises. What follows after this were other pieces from the wallpaper tape introduced by Hiller, including Film with Optical Sound by Anthony McCall, paired with a composition by the musician Richard Bernas, Tuning a Symbol. The last two pieces selected by Hiller were by Amikan Toren and David Coxhead.
Right. Now, the last work is by David Coxhead, and it's called The Collected Works. And he says as follows, I read all of my previously published pieces, and then he lists them, into one recorder, and then re-recorded the result onto the next. These were tape, you know, tape machines, reel-to-reel tape machines, onto another recorder and then back and speeding it up each time until he got to the required 4 minutes. And it took, of course, a great deal of time to read these, and it doesn't take very long to listen to them. So can we hear this? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I think that's it in terms of selections. One of the things that is perhaps very obvious, but I'd just like to make it explicit, is that it was the platform, if you like, offered by Audio Arts that created the possibility for us to do this experimental tape, because, of course, the transition from a print format to an audio format was a challenge and a pleasure. And the magazine itself has very clear examples of related works by the participants in the supplement in visual form. And it's hard to say which came first in some cases, the visual form and what happened with that on a tape, which came first, a second, et cetera, what the relationship is between the two forms of presentation. Anyway, it was thanks to Audio Arts that we did this. And I think now, retrospectively, I personally like it more than I did when we first made it, because maybe I've mellowed, or maybe the times have changed to some extent, where things can be seen as pleasurable without a kind of obvious subject matter. Yeah. So now what shall we do?
Maybe I would like to ask more, a few questions around this, or making some even comment. I was thinking, actually, the crossover very much between the wallpaper magazine and Audio Arts, in this cross-pollination between art form, which is very important, and particularly between poetry, visual arts, and experimental music. Because as I said before, when I was talking about the sound magazine, they were all specialized one type of thing, sound poetry or contemporary art. And I think both wallpaper and audio arts has this broad range of work. And this relationship between the visual and the oral is very important. And although audio arts name itself through, the visual is still very important, and all the tape they have inlay and the visual, the image of the cover are also very important. So there is the visual is also a reference as well. But if I understood well, the audio supplement, it was not the audio version of the printed one. Mm-hmm. So it was very much a number itself, and that's why I like the fact that there was the audio arts embraced completely the idea of...
Well, sometimes they were very close. For example, Richard, who's here, did these extraordinary number works in the magazine, and he also does a spoken version of number works on the supplement cassette. And Susan Bonvan, in fact, I brought along this rather late in the day, was doing a series of works about perception, and this is a different work of hers, but in the magazine, a kind of diagram, but very closely related to what she has on the cassette. So I think each person took a different view of what they were going to do. Yes?
Can I just say that Wallpaper Magazine was a gallery. It didn't have reviews.
That's right.
It didn't have articles. It had works. Yeah. And in a way, because none of us had galleries, it was the way to actually put the work out. So the entire set of issues is just pieces by people. It's not articles.
Yeah.
The conversation with Hiller continued on the subject of the archive and the issue of digitization. On the question how an archive can be defined in relation to an artist's practice, and in particular to William Furlong's editorial and artistic activity, other interlocutors from the audience joined a discussion, including artist Richard Quarel, the former Audio Arts interviewer Jean Weinreich, and the artist Maria Keker.
May I say that Anthony and Susan can contradict me if you like, but we did not set out to make an archive. As Anthony said earlier, we were looking for a platform to present what we were doing or thinking in real time. that's wallpaper, where, and the artist was in wallpaper, but audio arts was something else. Mm-hmm. And luckily, circumstances led us to come together and cross over for a number of years, and I think the wallpaper was published on into audio arts as a group, as a collective, for one time. So we had very different intentions at the time.
Yes.
Looking back now, 50 odd years later, you might see it as an archive, you might see it as being that, but it was never intended. I don't think in any of the artists who, I'm not recording this in order for posterity, it was just, it's recorded because that's the way it has to be to exist.
Mm. Yeah, but it's the same problem with audio arts. In fact, it became an archive because it's been acquired here. But before, it was just one lot of boxes in Bill's room. And in fact, there are some items, I call them now misleading items, which was several recordings that Susan did in the studio. And, you know, Bill and Michael offered their studio to record some of their artwork. And I said, what is doing here? And I finally, I got lost several times. And, of course, I started a conversation with Susan and Michael, and I realized that we have the tendency to think about archive as the historical source par excellence. But it can be the wrong story. We can put our foot in the wrong path and start writing history from things that they are not supposed to be in the archive. Yeah. So I think that, for me, is really the learning curve is this archive, because the way that the project was run and developed over the years.
But don't you think that possibly that the concept of the archive will be challenged utterly by audio, I'm talking about audio arts now, and Bill's boxes, including all of this fascinating stuff, but not strictly speaking leading to a cassette at the end, you know. And I think possibly his recognition of the way it was breaking down the borders of what his practice might have seemed to be at the beginning is all those supplements where people were offered a space to do something. And the something wasn't part of the mainstream idea, but it was certainly important to Bill. Mm. And so it grew gradually. Now, the question you're asking really is, what are the borders of this?
Yeah.
You know? And maybe other people have some ideas. Yeah. I don't.
We can open up to the...
I think it's really interesting what you're saying, because my experience with Bill also, the conversations themselves, the interviews, were very much allowing the interviewees and the interviewers to be a portrait of them as well. And I had circumstances where you put things on the tape, you left things in that I would have definitely taken out, certain laughing or me thinking out loud, literally, on the beginning, and he left it in. And I think that he had a real interest in the moment, being in the moment, which you talked about, the audio moment. And if the audio moment captured glitches and things, he just let that be. And he didn't train anybody to interview.
Yes. Yeah, can I just say that, and I'm not sure how it kind of will fit in, but I was just thinking, rather than thinking about how to kind of create boundaries, what the boundaries are, where these things are, just kind of think about the archive as something that you create, and then it's really up to the listener at that particular moment in time. I mean, I was just thinking, when I was listening to the sounds you were playing, I could also hear the sound of the, you know, my own body, you know, kind of people kind of shifting, hearing the ventilation. So it created his own moment, and my own thoughts, and my own contemporary moment, which affects my feelings. I mean, these are everything. So emotion, thinking, everything kind of is created within that particular moment. So the idea of archive to me is all the time.
In the early 1970s, when William Furlong and Barry Barker established Audio Arts,
The common ground shared by artists active in the expanded field was that of considering any possible resource, space and material available to make and show creative work. As emerged in a discussion at the Show and Tell, Wallpaper Magazine was established out of the desire to create a context for artists who did not have a gallery and very little resources for production. Audio arts appeared in a moment when there was a certain appetite for that kind of alternative space.
Listening to Audio Arts Wallpaper Supplement in conversation with Susan Hiller. Narration and text by Lucia Farinati. Recorded by the Tate Archive, 7th September 2018. Audio montage and supplementary recording by Lucia Farinati with the assistance of Richard Crowe, London, 2019. Sound works from the Audio Arts Wallpaper Supplement, 1975. Method of Revolving a Continuous Sound by Susan Bonvin. Two Exercises by Anthony Howell. And The Collected Works by David Coxhead. All sound works re-edited by David Cunningham in August 2018. With a special contribution of Susan Hiller and extemporary comments by Adam Bowman, Anthony Howell, Richard Quarell, Jean Wainwright and Maria Kaker. Special thanks to William and Violet Furlong, Claire Sexton and Adrian Glue at the Tate Archive, courtesy of Audio Arts, the Tate Archive, and the Susan Hiller Estate.